Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast, gathering evidence from the literature. We always are. I'm Mike Pratz, and with me today, Jacob Avila.
Hello.
Jacob, what are we going to discuss today?
Well, we're going to talk about this study right here. The study's entitled Test Characteristics of Point-of-Care Ultrasonography for the Diagnosis of Acute Posterior Ocular Pathology. And it was published in the Canadian Journal of Ophthalmology in 2016, late 2016. Now, I don't know about you, Mike, but when I'm doing an ophthalmologic examination, you know, someone's got this vision loss, it's not an anterior chamber thing, I'm concerned about a posterior chamber thing, I've ruled out strokes or TIAs and stuff. Looking at that posterior chamber can be kind of tricky, right? I mean, you're looking through this little tiny, you're, I don't know about you guys, but we're full a lot, you know, and I'm trying to find these, look at these guys' retinas in the hallway, I can't dilate their eyes, and it's just very hard. And that's one of the reasons why we're so excited about ultrasound for the diagnosis of posterior eye stuff. I mean, think about it. The eye is just a fluid-filled orb, essentially, right? If you break it down, and fluid-filled things do really good under ultrasound. So to be able to just have the patient close their eyes and stick the linear transducer over the eye and actually see what's going on has a lot of benefit to us in the emergency department when we are not ophthalmologists. So I think that's why this is important.
Might I just add that the eye is the window to the soul?
That's a great point. So their question was, what are the test characteristics of point-of-care ultrasound in diagnosing retinal detachments, tears, posterior vitreous detachments, and vitreous hemorrhages? So I am a little bit confused about their patient population. Maybe you can help clarify, Mike. So their population was patients referred to an emergency general ophthalmology clinic presenting with acute visual complaints. So I'm not sure if this was like an ER, or if this was like an ER within an ER, or if this was just like an ER just for eye stuff. I was just kind of confused about that.
I believe it is the latter. I got the impression that this is a ophthalmologic ER in a way. Now, it appeared to have emergency medicine residents because sometimes they were the ones doing the exams. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was close to the emergency department or somehow they rotated through there. But yeah. I think it was primarily an ophthalmologic place. No other types of complaints were being evaluated.
All right, so their inclusion was greater or equal to 18 years old, and then they had to have acute flashers or floaters or new visual field deficits of less than 7 days in duration. And they excluded the ones that you want to exclude, suspected globe rupture. And the main reason for that is that you don't want to put pressure on an eye that's leaking, because then you'll just leak all that goo out of the eye, and that's bad. If they had an anterior chamber pathology, so they had like iritis, they had endophthalmitis or something like that, they excluded them because it's an anterior chamber. Previous intraocular surgery, previous retinal detachment in the symptomatic eye, or they refused consent. So they had a couple of different people that did the ultrasounds. They had a medical student, some emergency medicine residents, and then some attending emergency physicians. They all apparently got the same amount of training. So it was a 1-hour workshop, and then they kind of reviewed the study protocol with some guidance. And they had access to the clinical information. So they weren't completely blinded, but they were only allowed to gather the amount of information necessary to decide that the patient could be enrolled, right? So they had to actually have all those criteria, you know, like the vision loss, less than 7 days old, no surgeries and all that stuff, to be able to enroll the patient. Their gold standard was a physical exam, essentially, from the ophthalmologist. So the ophthalmologists themselves didn't do any ultrasounds. They either saw them the same day or the very next day. And then they looked at the charts about 6 weeks after to see if there was any differences in that diagnosis. So they basically got an ultrasound, an ophthalmological examination from an ophthalmologist, and then 6-week follow-up.
So the sonologist was blinded to the ophthalmologist's exam. Pun intended.
Yes, I love it. I love puns. So, Mike, do you want to just explain to us what these things are? PVDs, RTs, RDs, VHs, what even are those?
Right, so these are all things that happen in the back of the eye, the posterior part of the eye. So first, let's talk about how to do an ocular exam. Like Jacob mentioned, you're going to be using a high frequency linear transducer. The eye and the retina specifically is one of the places where you can theoretically cause some damage by the mechanical and thermal impact of ultrasound. So most or some machines will actually have opto settings that you can switch to that try to reduce the mechanical index and thermal index from the ultrasound. So ideally you put it on your opto settings and then you examine the eye. Some people just squirt a lot of gel in the eye so that you can reduce the amount of pressure you can put on there. Some people are fans of putting a little thin layer, sticky thing, or a Tegaderm over the eye to protect some of that gel from getting into it. In any case, you're going to be orienting your probe, usually transverse and then sagittally, over the eye to evaluate both the anterior and posterior chamber. So what we looked for in this study, since we're focusing more on the posterior, they're looking for posterior vitreous detachments, or PVDs. Those were described as areas with low echogenicity that were in the posterior of the eye and seemed to kind of move around when you move the eye from left to right. This is in contrast with retinal detachment, which are usually hyperechoic thin lines that flap back and forth, and vitreous hemorrhages, which were larger areas of highly mobile fluid that's kind of rotating around in the posterior eye. These can be tricky to differentiate if you haven't seen a lot of them, but once you get the hang of it, they look pretty differently on ocular ultrasound. So it's a key point when you're doing this scan that if you're looking for vitreous, you sometimes need to turn up the gain in the back of the eye a lot to pick up some of those more subtle pieces of the vitreous that are floating around.
True.
As opposed to retinal detachment, those are usually fairly hyperechoic and will stand out, and you'll see that little waving line back in the eye. Importantly, remember that this has to be a dynamic exam. Some of these things don't pop up if the patient isn't moving their eye around in all directions.
One of the things that I found interesting is, have you ever looked for a tear as opposed to a detachment? I've never, like, I know what those are, and I know that, you know, like most people when they get older, they're going to have a little bit of posterior vitreous detachments. It's actually fairly normal as the vitreous shrinks, gets more liquidy. Occasionally, you have little adhesions between the retina and the vitreous, and they cause those tears as the vitreous retracts a little bit. Those tears can sometimes lead to retinal detachment. So they're thought of kind of like precursors, but I've never thought about actually like looking for that. Have you looked for that in the past?
I haven't knowingly seen a retinal tear. I guess it's possible that I have missed some or misdiagnosed them, but from what they describe here, it looks like they're just very small retinal detachments, at least as their appearance on ultrasound. So if you don't see, you know, a full thickness layer that's moving around for the detachment, but maybe just see a little flap coming from the retina,
yeah,
that seems to be how they're describing the retinal tears in this study. And an important point is that retinal detachment is attached to the optic nerve. So usually when you're looking for those, you can trace it back and see that it's kind of tethered to the area of the optic nerve, which you can see posterior to the globe.
Got it.
All right, so let me talk about the results here.
Please.
They had 62 patients that they enrolled, and when they were doing their follow-up, they got 6-week follow-up on 50 of them. These patients were on the older side. Mean age was 60. 43% had hypertension, 11.3% had diabetes, 42% were myopic. Mm-hmm. As far as the presenting symptoms, a lot of these came in with floaters, 58%. 33% had flashes, and smaller amounts had either description of a veil or curtain, decreased peripheral vision, or decreased visual acuity. Now, there was a high amount of pathology in this population.
Nice.
60 out of the 62 had pathology.
Dang, they don't make stuff up, huh? These guys. So if they're like, I need an IER stat, they're going to have something.
And I think that's probably why that this was such a specialized center. People were being sent here because maybe they had already diagnosed or they had already known that there was posterior eye pathology. So keeping that in mind, when they looked at all pathology, so any of the things that we were looking for, how well did point-of-care ultrasound do compared to the ophthalmologist's exam? 88.3% sensitive and 50% specific.
What?
Yeah, thumbs down there.
Can we like poop emoji?
Yeah, poop emoji. Okay, retinal detachment, of which there were 6, 100% sensitive, 67.9% specific.
Oh no.
When they grouped retinal detachments and tears together, 47.8% sensitive, 82.1% specific. Posterior vitreous detachment, 80.9% sensitive, 33.3% specific, and vitreous hemorrhage, 43.0% sensitive and 93.8% specific. So that's a lot of numbers. Heck. I think the main thing you could remember is that it's not very good for any of those, with the exception of 100% sensitivity with retinal detachment and 93.8% specificity for vitreous hemorrhage. Now, Jacob, what? Is that what you expected?
No, like not even a little bit. Like I want to say like in The Notebook, but the opposite of that. Like I want to say no 1,000 times no. That's how I feel about this. It's strange, and they had like really wide confidence intervals and stuff. And I mean, most of the data out there shows much better stuff. And there was actually a meta-analysis in Annals that actually mentioned the paper. That showed a sensitivity of 97 to 100% and a specificity of 83 to 100% for retinal detachment, which is much different than what these guys are quoting. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out why this is. Now, they mention that there was a medical student, a couple residents, and an attending. Do you know what proportion of those people did the proportion of the examinations? Like, was it mostly one person?
Yeah, it turns out that 85.5% of the exams were done by the medical student, which in the paper it says he has very little prior ultrasound experience.
Gotcha. So the least experienced both clinically and with ultrasound did the vast majority of the data is what you're telling me.
That is what I'm saying. Whether that had any effect at all is unclear.
True.
So I think that this is a good paper to discuss because ultrasound of the eye, I personally believe is much better than the results here. Mm-hmm. But I guess we have to be a little bit cautious whether this is showing us these poor results because of the operator or maybe because of the high amount of pathology in this group. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit difficult to interpret. One thing that I would like to take away from this is the false negatives. So what did they miss and say was normal? Well, the retinal tears, they ended up missing 14 retinal tears. 10 of those 14 were in the superior temporal area, and 13 of the 14 were diagnosed as posterior vitreous detachments. So that's a good point. Either perhaps they weren't getting a full exam of the whole retina and they missed some of the ones in the superior temporal, or maybe they were seeing these retinal tears and thinking they were posterior vitreous detachments.
Well, this one's, that last point is, I don't think that's like super fair because you get retinal tears when you have posterior vitreous detachments. So those patients might have actually had those PVDs and they missed the tears that happened because of posterior vitreous detachments. Like you don't have a tear without the posterior vitreous detachment because that's what causes the tear.
That's a great point. And it's not as though they weren't allowed to put down multiple diagnoses for these patients. A lot of times they did on both ultrasound and with the ophthalmologist exam. Mm-hmm. But maybe on ultrasound, who knows how that changes the appearance when if there's a posterior vitreous detachment and then there's a small tear under it. Can you see it? Maybe, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It might be difficult to differentiate. They did do 6-week follow-up for 50 of those patients and there was no change in their diagnosis compared to what they left after seeing the ophthalmologist.
Gotcha.
And in case you're wondering, 23 cases, all of the retinal detachments or tears did require an intervention.
Wow.
So you don't want to miss this.
Agreed. So, Mike, what do you think are some limitations? We already talked about a couple of them.
Yeah, I think that the fact that the sonologists were not fully blinded, so that could play in. If they kind of knew the history enough to say this patient came in with a sudden onset of a rush of floaters causing them to lose some vision, that may play into them thinking they're going to see something and trying to find it and looking extra hard. So you have a little bit of bias in that case.
Yeah.
Secondly, there was a high incidence of pathology in this population. This was an emergency eye clinic. So that is a little bit different from the population that most of us practice in.
Right, right.
And then, again, there was a lot of the exams performed by a single medical student that had little prior experience before getting the training for this study.
Gotcha.
So perhaps that played into some of the results too. To summarize this one, this was a prospective study that looked at patients at an emergency eye clinic, specifically using ultrasound to diagnose posterior pathology in the eye. The test characteristics for ultrasound was not great for retinal detachment, retinal tears, posterior vitreous detachment, or vitreous hemorrhage. I think one thing that is slightly comforting is that at least it was 100% sensitive for retinal detachment. Overall, the test characteristics for this pathology were not really accurate enough for clinical decision making based on the data in this study. Another take-home point would be that you should recognize that retinal tears can be misdiagnosed as posterior vitreous detachment. I thank the authors for performing this study. It was really helpful, and I think it's good for us to know, especially if we're using ocular ultrasound. And thank you for listening. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel.
Ultrasound gel.